all commissioners seen here? Thumbs up. All right, great. All members of the public seen here? Okay. This meeting is being recorded. Once President Bush asks me to call the roll, indicate you are here, as well as give permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record.
Okay, I call the March 2nd, 2021 Committee of the Whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Great, it's 7.07 p.m. Commissioner Bourne? Commissioner Covey?
Here.
Commissioner Ludden? He'll be here in a second. Commissioner Underdonk?
Here. Permission to record, all that stuff.
Chair Brooks?
Here, permission to record.
Excellent.
Okay, I call the March 2nd, wait a second, sorry. Oh, it's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. Okay, so we will move on to discussion on beach pass and daily fees.
I'm sorry, we're going to discuss first the pier, and Josh Ludden entered the meeting at 7:08.
Yeah, sorry. I was just so excited about the beach thing.
You know? I know. Just jumping ahead.
That interests me. Yeah. Okay, so Lisa Shepherd will introduce Caleb from Baird. Well, he's sitting waiting. That's not good.
Yes.
We'll explain the contract for pier renovation and answer any questions for the board.
All right. So, as Lisa said, Caleb's here from Baird to talk about his professional service contract for the pier renovation. Information for the contract was in your board packet. So I'm going to turn it over to Caleb, who's right there in the middle square on my screen.
Hi, everyone. I hope everyone's doing okay. Thanks. Yep, so we're discussing our proposal. Can everyone hear me all right? Okay. Yep, so we had submitted our proposal to finish the design, do the permitting, support the bidding, and the construction of the pier deck repair. I think we had submitted that towards the end of January. And yeah, I'm up here to answer any questions that you may have.
Great. Chris, do you have anything to add?
I do. You know, Caleb, I think it would be beneficial to just briefly explain to the board, again, the scope of your contract, what permitting is. I mean, this is a little bit unique of a project for us versus the types of landscaping and park design projects we normally do. So if you just could just kind of briefly take them through kind of what you envision as the scope.
Yep, I think. Yep, so how I have the proposal outlined, so task one is the permitting task. And so the permitting, kind of the first step in the permitting is we have an initial coordination meeting with regulators. It's kind of every project's a little bit different. Kind of where you're working, you know, right next to Lake Michigan, every project is kind of permitted a little bit differently. I have talked to the regulators a little bit about this project before we develop any alternatives, and it should be a Section 10 permit, which in general it's a general permit. It's easier compared to an individual permit, which would take a lot more time, a lot more effort. So we'll have an initial meeting with the regulators. And after that we will submit the permit. It's our understanding that permit will only be required with the Army Corps, if I recall, that's how I outlined it in the proposal. I talked to the state months ago, and they didn't think I'd need to submit a permit on the state side. And so that's task one. Task one is submitting of the permit and coordinating that whole process. Task two is the final design of the project, and so that's kind of the first step. What we'll do is we will develop 3 alternatives for the pier decorative, the concrete finish. We'll include some renderings in that. Ultimately looking for the board to select a path forward on the decorative concrete finish. Once that is selected, we will go through the final design process and submit the documents at a 50% stage, a 90% stage, and a 100% stage. And those documents will include the drawings, so the plans, cross-sections details. It'll include the general requirement specifications, so Division 1, then Division 2 plus, which are the technical specifications, as well as an updated opinion of construction cost. We plan to use a sub-consultant for the project, and they'll be supporting us with the electrical and lighting engineering portions of it, because Baird doesn't have those services in-house. So our sub-consultant will be visiting the site, inspecting the light posts, seeing what needs to be replaced, change it from to LED. And then they'll provide the drawings and specifications for updating the lighting. That is task two. Task three is the bidding services. So we will prepare the bidding documents using the Park District standards form is kind of what we've assumed. So the bidding documents are like the front end, which cover the procurement and the contractual portions of the contract. We will, and then also we'll help advertise, we'll help facilitate the pre-bid meeting, you know, on site. Then we'll issue any addendums that come up, and when the bids come in, we'll review the bids and provide a recommendation. That's everything that's covered underneath task three. And then task four is construction services. So we'll assist the park district during construction. What I've kind of included in here. So we'll issue the contract documents for construction. We'll organize and attend the pre-construction meeting. We will respond to any RFIs, review the shop drawings and submittals. If there's anything that comes up, we'll prepare change orders and field orders. Review the applications for payment, and I've included three site visits, I believe, so two during construction and one in. So I've included two site visits. So one of them is assumed that it'll be coincided with the demonstration of the decorative concrete surface finish. So what we'll have is probably at the contractor's yard. We'll have them. Finish would look like what they installed.
Caleb, you're cutting in and out on us.
Okay.
So I think we just kind of tailed off there on construction services. You were outlining, kind of wrapping the project up, getting some proofs done ahead of time, letting us approve it, and then going from there. So. Lisa, do you want to open it up to any questions on the board?
Yes, let's do that. I have two questions. One, can someone remind us what the total budget for this project?
Right now, we have a placeholder around $400,000 for construction.
And it seems like Baird on this project is kind of like serving Ultimate Israel and other projects. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Chris, would you describe this as sort of a specialized engineering project as opposed to the typical construction projects that we do?
I would. I would say, to Caleb's point, the proximity to Lake Michigan triggers a whole other level of permitting and design that we don't typically see in, like, a concrete driveway, that kind of thing. So, obviously Baird's fee structure is different than a landscape architect because that's not really what they are. I mean, they're coastal and structural and, hydrological engineers and things like that. So it's just a very different fee structure than we might see in a playground design.
Any questions for Caleb or Chris?
Questions for Caleb?
Go ahead, Dudley.
Okay. In many ways, this is a rehabilitation project and a maintenance project, although it's being enhanced to some extent. Yeah, but that's the way I really, I mean, I think I'm doing that the right way. Now, the addition of the lighting, I want to make sure that that is dark sky lighting. This is a major flyway for the bird migrations along Lake Michigan, so I need to make sure we don't get them confused. They might run into the tack-up center or something, but just want to be alerted to you of that particular issue. Caleb, I think you can deal with it.
Yeah, we can take that into account, yes.
Okay, that's great.
That's a very good point, Dudley. Any other questions?
Anything else for Caleb? I did see in the packet that there's going to be a demonstration of a few options for the imprinting, and that they're going to actually do it there in situ or whatever. They'll do it at the site, and you know, maybe any interested commissioners could join you at that time to help make that decision.
Lisa, I think that's part of what I'm going to cut out of me, but so the whole intent is the contractor can make, you know, minor adjustments. It'll really make a different appearance, and if before they place the concrete and, you know, have the entire decorative concrete finish like completed already, we'll have them complete probably three small, like 4-foot by 4-foot, like demonstrations of what the surface would look like, and each of those surfaces might be slightly different, and it allows you to have some input before the entire pier is constructed like that. Yeah.
Question about that? Is that a non-skid surface?
Depends
on what we pick, I guess. I'm concerned about, you know, waves splashing up there and people sliding around.
Yeah, ultimately that'll be part of the type of surface that we select. That'll definitely be a consideration.
And then color will be the other item?
Color, patterns. It could be different patterns.
Okay.
We'll narrow down the pattern to a couple of choices before we do that demonstration site, so it's not, you know, so the staff will narrow it down, but it's a little bit prior to that.
Can I confirm that this includes a new railing?
That's correct, yes. A new railing as well.
And will this railing be rust-free? We've just been having a lot of rust problems, Caleb. I'm sorry. That turn out to be expensive and really aggravating. So I'm curious, you know, you may not have the answer. This is not your thing because you're the engineer, but that is certainly an issue that you know, has been a problem for us.
Yeah, and we can look at some fiber-reinforced polymer options it's a higher initial investment, but you don't have the same maintenance requirements.
Okay, other questions for Caleb? No.
Great questions.
Any more? Stephanie, anything else? Okay. All right.
So,
okay, Lisa, go ahead.
I just need a consensus to advance this for approval at the next board meeting.
Okay, Dudley, are you?
I'm consenting.
Okay. Josh?
Yeah.
Good? Okay.
Yeah, I consent.
Stephanie, ready to move on?
Sorry, it's my favorite.
I know. Okay, you ready to move it on, Stephanie?
Yes.
Okay, and Michael?
No rust, good for birds, non-slippery surface, good lighting. I feel like we're in a good spot.
Sounds good, and yes for me too. Thank you. Thank you very much, Caleb, for sticking with us. I appreciate it. And you can go with our good wishes.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, so now on to Discussion on the beach pass and daily fees. Lisa Shepherd and Bobby Collins will lead that discussion.
Great. Bobby, you want to pull up the presentation? So Matt's here also. So Matt and Bobby are going to give a presentation of Glen Cove Beach pricing. We hope we have a consensus tonight because we have a great desire for people to buy it, know when they can buy their passes. So we want to firm up the prices tonight so that we can get information out to the printer. So.
Can everybody see the presentation? Great.
Yes.
Matt.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for hearing our presentation on the recommendations for pricing for the 2021 beach season. As you all know, when we met at the regular board meeting last month, we came to the consensus that option 2A was the best. There was also some talk about making the daily admissions 7 days, or excuse me, 5 days a week, so to include Fridays. So that's where you see at the bottom, option 2A. The hybrid is the hybrid of option 2A and 2B. So we would offer daily admissions Monday through Friday, starting at 12 p.m., staggered for the admissions process, and no daily admissions on Saturday, Sunday, and holidays. Season pass holders would have access 7 days a week. So our pricing strategy, the objective for our season passes is to increase the value of the max, increase pass value while maximizing pass sales. And how do we plan to do that? There's five different areas that we'd like to focus on. Pricing for the 2020 season would be, or excuse me, 2021 season would be in line with where we're at in 2020. Exclusive access to all season pass holders all season long, including weekends, holidays. Guest passes would only be sold to our season pass holders. Discounts would be offered to our season pass holders as well for beach rentals, for chairs, umbrellas, kayak rentals, sup rentals, and they'd also have exclusive access to pass holder appreciation events, which we're coming up with a fun line of evening events that we can do, some of the ideas we have, concerts on the beach, campfire night, movie night, fun, engaging opportunities for the community to come together down at the beach. Why do we want to maximize our pass sales? As we've seen, the revenue is not impacted by the weather when we sell season passes, as opposed to a daily admission. Pass holders' visits are typically shorter, but more frequent than those that are coming for a daily admission. Pass holders also tend to be more vested in maintaining the lakefront. That goes back to the second point where people that are coming down for daily visits are coming down for possibly multiple meals a day, which creates more trash and just more mess along the or at the beach or in Lakefront Park. And being a season pass holder also helps create the sense of community that we have seen is so desperately needed and wanted, especially over the past year dealing with the pandemic. So with regards to the dailies, it'll help limit the financial burden on our taxpayers. So you will only just be depending on season pass sales. We'll have that revenue from daily admissions to help offset. We want to simplify the fee structure, which is in line with what our strategic plan is reducing the barriers for people to access our parks and facilities, both resident and non-resident. And we just want to increase access to the beach. As we know, season passes were the only way to get in last season, and we want to be able to offer everybody the ability to enjoy our beautiful lake. So here, I'm going to start down at the bottom. We're going to go over the history of our passes since 2013. Watts went to digital pass system at that point. Now you'll see there's a four-year gap before the beach could do that. That is due to our connectivity issues. We couldn't get internet or Wi-Fi up at the halfway house that would be adequate for running Rec Track in our point of sale system. So in 2017, we had that connectivity ability. So we started doing digital passes that summer. This past summer, we were only doing season passes. And one of the hardships that we ran into was people were tending to run up the number of passes per household that proved to be a little bit troublesome for staff to track, and it also just took up manpower to see if there was really 8 people living under a household in Glenco, or they were just adding people from neighboring towns on. So what we did is we used Watts as a test pilot this winter to see what a flat rate structure would look like per pass, and it's proven to be quite beneficial, not only from a revenue standpoint, but also from people just registering people in their own households. And as you'll see as we go through the presentation, we will be proposing that we move towards that flat rate structure for season passes.
So I wanted to give the board and the community just some insights into some of the financial data and some of the attendance stats for the last couple of years, and what went into some of the decision making and recommendation that the staff has made. So in 2020, as you know, we just did pass sales and we did guest passes. You can see here the pass price structure is quite complicated. It's not easy to follow. In fact, we have quite a lot of feedback from the community and online that it's hard to know what you're actually paying for. So this summarizes the number of passes sold for residents. We sold just under 4,400 passes for $131,000 in revenue. You can see we had an early bird price. We had a senior price that had early bird, and then we had an additional pass price. So when you take the amount of money we brought in for residents and the number of passes sold, the average pass cost for resident just under $30. Looking at the same information for a non-resident, again, similar with the early bird pricing, senior rates, and additional, we had just over 1,600 passes sold for $97,000 in revenue for an average price pass of just over $60. So we sold just over 6,000 passes for $228,000 in revenue. Additionally, we sold guest passes to both residents and non-residents. For resident, it was $50 for 10 punches. For non, it was non-residents, $100 for 10. We sold a significant amount of them to residents, 373 10-punch passes, which total revenue for all guest passes was just over $27,000. What will stand out to you is the redemption rate. Residents, 37% were redeemed, 40% for non-residents. And when you look at the actual number of visits, the amount of revenue collected, the average resident guest pass cost $13, and non-resident was just over $25. So the district and the taxpayer did quite well on those guest passes. 2019 was the last year that we did daily admissions. It wasn't a very busy summer due to the weather, but I wanted to give you a breakdown of what those attendance stats look like now that we are going to be moving towards a Monday through Friday daily pass option. So residents, the regular rate was $7, $5 for seniors. When we took the Monday through Friday visits, it was just over 2,100 paid daily visits, bringing in just under $15,000 in revenue. It's about half of the Saturday-Sunday revenue. So if you look at Saturday-Sunday, that was about $15,000 as well. On the non-resident side, the regular daily pass was $14, $10 for seniors. We had just over 4,800 visits Monday through Friday, just over $67,000 in revenue for those Monday through Friday visits. So the Monday through Friday revenue was just under $82,000 or just under $7,000. Underneath here, you can see the average daily attendance stats. So it ranged from anywhere from 105 on Monday to 186 daily visits. So that's paid on the day visits in 2019. So this is all data we use to come up with our recommendation for 2021. Also remember that we surveyed almost 500 people, 500 households at the end of last summer, and just under 89% said that they plan on purchasing a season pass for 2021. Again, that is all mostly of the no's and the comments that weren't included in that 88%, 89% were a lot of comments around, well, it depends what you do, and it also depends what happens with pools on my local beach, Chicago beaches. So what our staff did was we came up with two options, option A and option B. And we built some models around that just to give the board an idea on financial impact of what we're going to do. we're not set necessarily on any of this. We're open to feedback. We have made our recommendation, but we are more than willing to listen to any feedback on it. So if you looked at 2020, we sold just over 6,000 passes. And what we did for our option was we did a best case, base case, and worst case. Best case was we sold 100% of the passes of last year. Base case, which is what we're using for the budget, was 75%, and worst case being 50%. You can see in the yellow here the pass prices, pretty complicated. We are looking to do a more simplified pricing structure, as Matt said, due to the issues we discussed, along the lines of $35 per pass for a resident or $70 for non-residents. Under twos and over 65 free. And what we really use as the metric is a family of four, how much that costs to go to the beach. So we're recommending that costs $140 for a resident family of four and $280 for a non-resident. So that would line up with what we did in 2020. So looking at those inputs, the best case scenario, our pass revenue, it would be $266,000. Our base, which is what we made the assumption for the budget, will be $200,000, and our worst case will be $162,000. We then did some analysis on the daily fees. And for this model, we said we're not going to change the price from 2019. So the price would remain at $7 and $14 for our regular dailies. That would mean the break even will be 5 visits to pay for the pass. But what we did in our model was we said, the reality is a lot of residents bought passes, so we're going to have a lot left that are going to do the daily. So we took 25% of the daily attendance in 2019 and put that into our model. We made a similar assumption with non-residents. We're going to say hopefully they'll buy passes, but we know that non-residents tend to pay more dailies, pay for the dailies. So we took 75% of the 2019 actual non-resident dailies and put that into the model. And what that looked like was $54,000 in daily revenue. So what you can see in this option A, our best case for total revenue will be $321,000, $254,000 in our base case, and $216,000 in our worst case. And when you compare that to 2020 of $228,000, we're kind of in the ballpark. It looks pretty healthy. In our option B, we made a change to the daily fee. So we kept the same for the pass structure, the same 35 and 70, same for the price of a family of four. But what we did was we increased the daily fee to $10 for a resident and $20 for non-residents. That will make the break even for the pass 3.5 visits, so a lot more attractive to purchase the pass. How does that look on daily revenue? Well, so that would be $78,000 we'd be expecting in daily revenue. And our overall best case, $344,000 in total revenue, $278,000 in our base, and $239,000 in our worst, which all three are ahead of the actual total revenue in 2020. You can see in green here that first option, how that compares to option B as well. So what is staff's recommendation? To simplify, we're recommending this more simplified flat fee structure. So $35 a pass, seniors and anyone under two being free, and then non-residents, $70, so twice the resident pass price. We would eliminate the early bird, as we see that there would not be a need for one this year, as people are pretty keen to purchase the pass. On the daily fee side, we would increase residents to $10 from $7 and to $20 for non-residents from $14. What are other beaches doing? You can see us down the bottom here in red just for comparison purposes. Wilmette has not made a decision. They're hoping to know this month. Winnetka has come out in the last couple of days and posted theirs, so they're going to do dailies Monday through Wednesday only, and it's going to be $10 and $20, so that lines up with what we had recommended. They're going to do season passes where the non-resident is going to be double the resident. So a family of four will be $135 for residents and $270 for non-residents. And they are also offering free senior resident pass. Highland Park is making a big change this year. It's pass holder only. So residents in the past could turn up with an ID. Now they are going to be required to get an advance pass. It's going to be free for those residents. A non-resident family of four would pay $175. There is also an additional parking sticker required to park in their lots. So that would bring up the price for non-residents significantly. Resident parking is free with a city sticker. Lake Forest just does dailies. It's free to residents with an ID. Non-residents dailies are $25. Parking is pretty significant. I think it's almost $900 for a non-resident. Otherwise, they have the option of parking 2 miles away in their downtown. Would open up any thoughts, questions, concerns from anybody?
Is that from the Lakefront Advisory Committee? I just wondering where that came from.
It comes back to our strategic plan and consistency for our residents. So for a long time, we have not charged anyone over 65 at the ice rink. So we do get a lot of questions why we don't charge at the ice rink, but we do charge at the beach. We also see that when we have seniors, say in 2019, only 100 visits to the beach were to residents over 65. The price and having to pay is a huge obstacle, and it's probably an area of the community that would benefit the most from recreational opportunities. So we see it as a need in the community and a way of encouraging anyone over 65 using the facility and getting outdoors.
Every resident, no matter what, though, would need a pass because you're going to track them in your system. So,
right.
They would still get a pass. Even if everyone will sign up and get a pass, correct?
Sorry, I broke up. I believe you said that they'd have to sign up for a pass.
I'm just thinking today, whether or not people pay for free or not, so kids under two or seniors would still sign up for a pass. Correct. They're still tracked in the system when they come down. They
right.
Give their name at the halfway house. So it's not like anyone comes down that's under two or over 65. Correct.
Correct.
Yeah. That's correct. Because what we want to do is first we want to track them, and then we also want to verify that they are residents and 65. And we're going to let the office do that and take them. So they'll have to come and prove their residency and prove their age before getting that. Hey, Bobby, can you go back to the recommending page?
Sure. So, Stephanie, I would add that 129 resident seniors purchased passes in 2020. We heard from a lot of them that they just wanted to exercise using the hill, and due to our policy that you had to have a pass, they were kind of forced into that. We tend to see that age group using it as their mechanism for fitness, and traditionally not sitting on the beach or using lifeguard services.
And I want to make it clear that it's just for that senior pass. So, for example, if their spouse was 63, they would still have to buy a pass. If that household was buying passes for, say, their children or grandchildren, they would still have to buy a pass just for that pass holder, not for the whole household.
And it equates to $6,500 in revenue for 2020 with senior passes, resident passes.
And so based on also our neighbor, Winneka's doing the same thing with the, lawsuit.
Just to make sure, I guess I've got two questions. One, the seniors are only allowed in Monday through Thursday. They're not allowed in Friday, Saturday, Sunday, unless they have
no. No, they could be allowed 7 days a week. They would have to get a pass. So they would be considered pass holders. If they just wanted daily, actually, they would have to pay the daily rate. So they would have to come in and sign up for a pass, fill out all the pass paperwork. They would get their pass, and they would go Monday, every day of the week. But if they didn't want to do a pass and they just came in for daily during their normal operating hours, they paid the daily fee.
That mitigates some of the risk anyway, because you have to be a senior that has the senior season pass is free, a senior daily is the daily.
Yeah.
Okay. My second question for you is, I'm going to throw a curveball, and only Bobby, because you said, hey, these are just suggestions, and you may or may not act a welcome concept. I am somewhat concerned, and I mentioned this to Lisa in passing, that, you know, I think that the family of four works great because you've got two kids, I've got two kids, but there are a lot of people that have three, four, five kids. A lot of people have four kids. This represents a significant increase. Is there, and I'm not opposed to abstract pricing, but is there a way to sweeten the pot somehow for these folks that are kind of used to lower additional pricing beyond the certificate? Could we do something that says, look, for every head of household, because I think you track the head of household, right?
We do.
Could we say for every head of household, you get two free guest passes a year? Just to kind of, you know, sweeten the deal a little bit. It's not going to be that high of a cost. It's something that probably not going to be taken advantage of that much, but it makes people feel good. One example I could probably show you is, or you can probably help me out with, is when you gave a free paddleboard lesson to pass holders a few years ago, and like seven people took advantage of it. It's one of those things that markets really well, but it's not often taken advantage of. So I don't know if you thought of anything like that.
I think that's a good idea. It's something we can look at. I think on the flip side of that, we hear a lot from families of less than four who say they feel like they've been penalized for not having families. And then when, with the first pass holder model, empty nesters or people who say, you know, I'm paying for the schools, I'm paying for all these services, and it's just me in town. So I actually think this is a more equitable option. But I don't disagree with you. I think that the more we can value the pass, I think that only adds to more pass sales. So something we can absolutely look at. We are trying to streamline and make it as concise and clear for people as possible. So each additional person is an extra $20 over four. So if you have a fifth. So, you'd be paying the $15 anyway for the additional pass. So, $35 is the marginal $20. So,
right.
for Starbucks cup.
Well, look, if you're getting, you know, and you'd be giving away $20 of value. But if you're granted, you're giving $20 of value to everybody, because it's 2-day passes is $10. You give $20 of value to everybody. Something to consider. I would take a look at it just to soften the blow, because I do think that. You know, people are used to having their, you know, kids at $15 pop, and going from $15 to $35, even though it's only $20, is a huge, you know, 100% increase for those folks. But I agree with you, the system was broken before, so I'm glad we're fixing it. But sometimes softening will help.
So the only other thing we did think about was there is a lot of people who, with the $15, just bought the pass because they said, you know, why not? With the guest pass option, it's really cheap for if you've got somebody in town from college for 1 week, they can use one of their guest passes for a child. So that's a $5 versus paying the $35. So,
but you got to buy trips. You have to buy
a 10-punch pass.
So that one or two times in town, that's where I'm having hang up. Look, I buy the guest pass for walks, and I use like three of them, and I keep myself in the
We can definitely add that if that's what the rest of the board wants to do, but
I like the concept.
Remember the people that all the value we're giving already is that, you know, based on our survey, people were willing, number one, to pay one if they had more use of the beach for season pass hold only. So we're giving that on the weekend. We're giving you discount paddleboard and kayak rentals. There's other benefits they're getting that are kind of offsetting that general fee for the kids, families that have more than five or six. Otherwise, it's a even swap for them.
Lisa,
it does. If let's say you're ahead of house and you only buy a pass for you and your spouse, then it's $70. If you give them two dailies or whatever, then that's $20. Then they're only paying $50 for two passes. So it's pretty messy pretty quick. I mean, I get what you're saying, but it, you know, if you look at it that way, because not everyone has kids, so it is cleaner to say the $35. And I think using that guest pass as an option with a kid who, you know, might come only twice, he's in camp or whatever, you know, hopefully that's how families think of it. But.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it if you have more than five people on your account, you get two free passes. Well, I was just shooting the idea out. I'm not saying it's perfect. Stephanie, you are absolutely correct. If you have two people on the account and you get two free guest passes, you know, you're giving away, you know, a little bit more value. There are ways to work it. You know, if you have more than four members, we'll do it. I don't know. I don't love the fact, I get why we have to do it. I don't love the fact that a family of six is now penalized, you know, $40 more when I'm not penalized. Maybe I got two more kids, but it could be a big number for some people.
I think Josh was trying to say something.
Josh, go ahead.
So it's an interesting discussion about the size, but I'll leave that for others. I want to pick up on a related thing, which is the guest pass, and whether or not you should get one for the season pass. Very sympathetic to Michael's comment that you buy the 10-pack and then you use three of them and you feel like a sucker. I also feel like there's a lot of value to the community to have a season pass holder bring their friends to the beach. And it's a pretty high bar to say, hey, we want you in March to commit to spend whatever it is, $100, because you might invite your friends in August. And I wonder if there isn't something to say, hey, for every $35 pass you buy, you get one guest pass, or maybe it's a more complicated formula than that, but really like the idea that if you're a family of four, or if you're a couple and you've invested in your season pass, you have the ability once a summer to bring some, you know, bring a family of four from some other town as your guest to visit the beach, and it's not like some big financial decision.
Maybe we could make that an incentive attached to the soon-to-be-discarded early bird, which I love, by the way, because I love something that makes people, you know, encouraged to get in there and get it before the season gets started. So I'm wondering if that could be the early bird incentive, and, you know, sort of solve two desires at once.
Idea. So buy your passes before May Memorial Day and get two free guest passes for every if you buy two or more passes.
Yeah. Can you just do one? Because it's still $5, which would be, that's still giving away, the early bird is a nice incentive and kind of maybe a compromise, is just say you get one guest pass.
One guest pass per person or per household?
Yeah. Because it's $35 a season pass, so.
Well, normally with the early bird, how did that used to work? Was that just for household you get the discount?
So it would be by a date. So it would be a discount on the first person in the household. So instead of it being $95, I think it was $76 for the first person. And then the additional was still $15. So
it's still an incentive. You get one free guest pass, it's still an incentive. I don't think you're not going to get one for each pass. I think that's crazy.
The other thing, Bobby, is you have to think about, you had a good slide about utilization of the passes. You're not really giving away the $10 per day pass. You're giving away a third of that, because only a third of the passes actually get used.
Yeah. I will also say, though, that the revenue that comes in with that, you know, the reason why we recommended the prices based on what we did here, so there could be a financial impact. You sell less guest passes, revenue does reduce. So the more you give away, the less revenue you bring in. So just bear that in mind.
I like this idea. I just would only be in favor of giving one.
No matter how many passes you buy. I'm just asking
the question.
No matter
how many passes you buy, yeah.
That or it's an S box of ideas. You could pick one day of the week where guest pass holders can bring one friend or something like that for free. That's just an idea, something along those lines. I would have to think through it.
Yeah,
in depth, but something like that might be a better option.
Well, look, Great America does that, and I think Lisa Shepherd, who lives up there, probably knows the parking lot is 10 times fuller on a day you can buy a guest pass. My recommendation is either A, don't do anything with guest passes, or B, do it really, really simple, where if you have, you know, four or more people on your account, you get two free guest passes and be done. Otherwise, it's too complex. It doesn't do it.
You had me until the end, Michael. If you want to go simple, you buy one pass, you get one guest pass. Buy four passes, you get four guest passes.
For one per household.
One per household. Head of household gets, you know, two free guest passes.
That seems kind of cheap.
Yeah.
Finally.
That is a little
cheap. And I think we need to give it away. We already have the hands of these passes, so
we have demand for it, but I'm gonna step outside the revenue thing here for a second. This is like one of America's most beautiful beaches, as voted by a whole host of people. It is like a gorgeous natural beauty that this park district maintains incredibly well. And I think the idea that we're raising the price for larger families, and you know we have this resource. If you want to bring a friend once or twice, like, I love the idea if you wanted to show off the beach to your friends and family. Like, I think it's a great idea. But again, I'm not gonna, not my hill to die on. But like, I wouldn't let sort of and we're making $40,000 more this year than we did last year. I wouldn't be penny wise and pound foolish on something like this. I keep it simple and do it just to soften the flow of the price increases for them.
So is
the question trying to keep the numbers down this year? So yeah. Encouraging.
I'm not personally concerned about that. I don't think we had a numbers problem last year when there was literally nothing else to do. And especially now that, you know, the Fed thinks the vaccine is going to hit everybody by late May, there's going to be other activities there. So I am personally not concerned about, as concerned about the overcrowding this summer as I was, I think you guys were last summer. I'd rather be engaging here than financially, like, nickel and dime.
Okay, so the issues on the table are, do we formulate an incentive that works as an early bird incentive, as a free guest pass, and if we do, what is it? Is it one per household? Is it one per four-person household, or is it one per per resident pass?
From a staff point of view, if you give it to one group and not another, so somebody has a four household versus a five, they're going to say, well, why don't I get it?
Okay, four or more. So let's say four or more.
Yeah,
I don't think that's fair either, because then you're going to say, only if you have a family, you get this incentive. I think you have to go for
paying. But that's the whole point, because if you don't have a family, you're paying $7 less, right?
Yeah, but yeah, Michael, can I just... I've traveled with a family of five on a lot of airlines, and they've never given us a discount, even though there were five of us.
Up until last year, we weren't tax subsidized.
So, I mean, you know, you have four people, you have six people in your family, you know, you got to pay for them.
I think the question on the table, Lisa Brooks, is first you should ask, do we think we should offer some sort of free guest to people who buy passes? If that's a yes or a no. If the answer is no by the board, then we sort of close it. If the answer is yes, then we have to say to ourselves, well, do we do this for everybody or just families of four or more?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I said. So should we go down the line and get people's input? Michael, why don't you start? What would you like?
I like the idea of at least two free guest passes for people who buy season passes, at least for the head of household. I feel more generous, but I like that at a very minimum.
So you're saying two, even if it's just one pass? Two if it's two passes.
It's just like we did with the surfboards or the boogie boards.
Okay.
Would it be beneficial to possibly have people choose between that, Michael?
So just a question. So you're having the pass holder has to be there with the guest when it's redeemed, because I'm just thinking logistically from the pass side of view of setup. It's a little bit more cumbersome to do that, but...
You can do that on the account or no? Like, if my wife is the pass holder and I'm on her account as a second person, I couldn't bring a guest, I couldn't use it?
You can. You can do that. It automatically goes on to the head of the household.
Yeah, I think it's how it works.
That's how it's run it.
Tessa brought a friend last time with Alan when I wasn't there.
Just someone has to be there.
Someone
has to be there. Yeah. I also look at the price of the pass, $35 for the whole summer. Pays off in three and a half visits. Pool prices are about double when you go to aquatic center.
Oh yeah.
I'm just playing devil's advocate, you know.
You can't go to the Highland Park Water Park, I don't think, for less than $35 for a single visit. I mean, it's really expensive. Maybe it's 30, but it's very expensive.
And remember, my goal was to soften the blow for people who are paying 15 and are not paying 35. That was my intention at first. It
sure.
Morphed since then, but that was the intention. I don't think the water park at Highland Park has more than doubled their price in a year for a family for the fifth kid.
I don't know what they've done. In any case, we're talking about value. So Michael, you unless you change your thoughts, what you said stands, correct?
Yeah, I think at a minimum, two free passes per household for four or more, but I could go down for everybody to be here.
Stephanie, go ahead. Sorry.
I think the distancing has to be even for everybody. It can't just be for families over four. I really don't think we need to do anything. If people feel there's really a need to do something, then do it with early bird, and I still think it should just be one guest pass. But really, I'm really not in favor of mixing this up. I think it's going to get too confusing.
Josh?
Staff has talked a lot about wanting to create value in the pass, and this is one of the ways we can do that, right? If you buy a pass, you get a guest pass or whatever number. That's one of the enticements to buy a pass in the first place, instead of not buying a pass and trying to use daily admission. So I think we should keep that in mind. One of the reasons we're considering this is to entice people to buy passes. Second thing I would say is simplicity is key. That's why I strongly recommend you just get one free pass for each season pass that you buy. One free daily pass or guest pass for each pass that you buy. It's fair to somebody who buys one season pass. It's fair to somebody that buys six. If staff recommends making it limited to early birds, I think that's fine. I think that's also pretty simple. But as soon as you start saying, well, it's two passes for the head of household, but nobody else, or you only get it if you buy it just seems very complicated. And the last thing I'd say is not from a financial perspective, but just as a resident who's brought lots of my friends to the beach. It's a really impressive part of Glencoe, and I really hate feeling nickel and dimed about, can I invite my friends from Evanston Beach, or do I have to go up and somehow buy a pass for them? I just want to bring them to the beach.
Yeah, I actually think, Josh, that's a good point. And you'll probably sell more, you may sell more of the 10 pass, the 5 pass, get pass, or whatever, if you give a couple out for free, too. They want to come back again. But I redact my two per head of household, and I add on, or I concur with Josh about, one free guest pass per household, as long as it's easy to administer on staff side. Like, if you guys can administer it, if it's in the arts, then you should think about it differently. But I do like the concept a lot.
Dudley?
Do you hear me?
Yes.
I like Josh's idea. It seems simple. I think the I especially like the idea of it as being an incentive for an early bird approach. We don't know exactly what the weather's going to be this year, and it's always nice to get cash early in the season.
Yes, and I'll round it up with I agree with Stephanie, we wouldn't need to do it, but I also think it works very well as an incentive, just in general, to buy a pass, to kind of acknowledge that the value, it is more expensive this year for as you have multiple people, but the value is there in the season pass. This gives an incentive, but I would definitely like a connected, coupled with early bird. I like the incentive of people feeling like they need to get in there and do it and buy it. And I hope that these statistics that show us these passes really are not used fully, you know, remains so that it doesn't create any problems for us. And I do, you know, really, when Josh said it's just a really big deal when you have friends from another community and you're taking, they're not going there on their own, you're taking them with you to show you, because you're proud of this, and this is our home and this is our beach, come join us for a couple hours on the beach or a few hours. It's a really, really nice thing, and it's a really, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's a community benefit. So I would say that model makes the most sense as long as you can reasonably manage it on the staff side, then I like that.
I have one more request.
Yes,
I want Matt Walker to deliver tiki drinks to my guests and I once a summer.
What kind of, you say tiki drinks?
Yes.
Yes, Matt. My next question, is this applying to...
Absolutely.
It's a good question here. It's the non-resident question. Yep. Is this applied to non-residents also?
Well,
you buy the pass, yeah.
Okay.
Wait,
is that a consensus? I just need yes or no. Is that a consensus? Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, make a buy the pass. No, this would be a separate way. This is for consensus. I don't think we had it on the early bird or not. I'm okay with just early bird. Sounds like Lisa Brooks says, I don't know about Josh and Stephanie and Matt. And,
can I ask a question of Bobby? Do we have an early bird date set, or were we not doing early bird?
We don't have it set.
But we can set it, right? Yeah.
You have it on.
Correct, Bobby?
We can set one. Unfortunately, we can put it online.
That's because we were going to put the prices online anyways, too.
Yeah.
So.
But it's a card that's going out, and I'm not sure it states an early bird date.
It's not on the postcard, but they have to go to the website anyways to see the prices, so we could do it there.
Yeah. I say we have to do, or if we're going to do it, we have to do it early bird. It's too hard if somebody buys a pass day of, and then having to add, like, it is a manual process. It's not, RecTrack is not easy for it, so there is on the back end. Is it doable? Yes. I think the downside is the risk to that revenue that came in from passes last year, and as long as the board understands that, I think that's the downside.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of upside, too.
Yeah. Is the board comfortable with the same structure for non-resident? One per pass, early bird only.
Yeah, I think that's the only fair way.
The only thing is they're getting more value because they're, you know, their pass is more expensive. But you're probably right, and it would be way too confusing and really punitive if we didn't offer it to residents and non-residents. So I would agree, Stephanie. Dudley?
My question is with the non-residents, because I know that residents go on sale first, correct? Just like our other program. So is that tricky with the early bird time frame?
No, because it's only a couple weeks difference. It's way before.
Yeah.
So if we start selling passes in March, it's only 2 weeks before we sell non-resident passes.
Okay. So that early bird time period is usually what?
Till we open, the weekend before we open.
Okay. I don't know if I would wait that long.
Yeah, we'll have to put like May 1 or something like that.
May 1, yeah, that sounds good. May 1 sounds good.
Okay.
they have a month and a half to order it. I like it. That's an incentive. And then, but we have a deadline, so it's not everybody. So,
Stephanie, are you good with that?
Not with another one or two, because we all have different opinions on that.
I think what's in front of us now is one per pass, a guest pass per pass, both resident and non-resident, until only early bird, which is now probably going to be May 1.
I love it. Thank you guys. I do think this offense as well. I do think it's gonna be here. And Bobby, I'm predicting right now. I predict a 58% utilization rate on the passes.
Well, we really want people to buy guest passes, so hopefully we still have those families that get five free still buy five. That'd be good. Which they probably will. So
every time we do something like this with the airline, every single time we do, it encourages more. It's crazy. It's kind of like the reason why stores sell gift cards. They don't really make money off of gift cards. In fact, you know, there's no breakage there, but if Best Buy sells a $50 gift card, the odds are someone's going to come in and buy something that's $80 or $90.
Right.
It pushes people up. So I think this is going to be revenue positive as well. But we'll see.
Hopefully.
We'll see. Right. Josh.
Sorry. I'm good.
Okay, great. Dudley?
I'm good.
Okay. Lisa, Bobby, Matt, do you have your direction?
We sure do.
Wait, I want to talk for a moment about the seniors.
Oh, yes, Dudley.
Okay, I want to talk about the seniors. Seniors like myself will have to come in and register anyway, is that correct? Even though it's free.
Yes, they would have to get a pass.
How would you folks feel about a registration fee to recoup some of the costs of administration for them, and myself? I don't know, it's just to offer something totally free that everybody else has to pay for just because of an arbitrary age, it feels a little uncomfortable to me. I'm okay with a reduced level, but I think most of our seniors can afford a few dollars for beach access.
Well, what I would say is that we want to keep this as clean as possible. So if you're not comfortable giving it free, I would just say do the $35, and then they're getting that free guest pass for the grandchild. I mean, it's hard to say $35 and the seniors is $10, and now this one. So.
I hear you.
Right? No right answer. It's up to you.
And in some ways, you're saying it's not worth the paperwork, huh?
Just trying to streamline,
simplify the offer.
Simplify everything.
Okay.
But it's up to you, whatever the board feels comfortable doing. We're just we do it for free at Watts, so that's whenever that started. That's why we're doing it free here. And we do realize that most of our seniors buy it for the exercise portion of it. Not to say they'll do it this year, because we're going to go back to our regular hours. You know, we're not going to require a pass from until 11, right, Bobby?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. So, you know, maybe some of those won't buy it at that time, but it will go back to our normal operations. So, again, we don't make a lot of money. We make $6,500, so it's up to you to decide if you want to make it look like it's a goodwill with our seniors.
Optional, right? Okay.
We'll just say it's the Dudley fee. It's $35 a pass.
Yeah.
Just for me. Okay. I'm convinced. Okay. I don't want to create paperwork issues or
Stephanie?
Credit card issues.
What are we doing this year with staff? You know, last year with COVID, we didn't give it to staff. What is the rule this year?
That's a good question. We do have in our benefits that staff get a free pass, and we would like to continue that this year.
you know, I think we have to see what the initial demand is as well. I think we were waiting to see, you know, do we have a lot of demand, which we probably will, and what those numbers look like.
I don't think we offer it to the school district, the village, this year, but I would like to offer it to staff.
Will people who get free passes do not get a free guest pass, correct?
Correct. Oh, right. So if seniors would not get a free pass, they're not getting a free pass. Okay. You have to actually make a purchase. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Anything else? I think we're good on that. Not directly related to this. Will the shelters be open this year?
Yes.
We're hoping to be.
We'll have to look at what the guidelines from the state are, but our preview is that, yes, we'll be able to do that.
Great.
Likely there will be advance reservations for some of those shelters based on the guidelines.
Good.
So registration, so we have time to clean between them, things like that. And we'll also do, we're also planning on doing paddle boards and kayaks this year also, with reservations, obviously, and time between them.
Okay, if there is nothing else on the beach pass and daily fees, and staff has what they need, we will move on to other business. Lisa Shepherd will present her information.
Great, thank you. Well, what I want to bring to you is that we have had the idea of doing a WAT season pass renewal after the season ends. So we anticipate closing WATs on Monday based on the temperatures. So we're able to extend the season for a week. But come Monday, we would like to offer season pass renewals for next year at this year's prices. Kind of like Michael referred to Brady Barraha. You do that to track that interest. People are so excited about WATS. They're asking, can we renew for next year? We have that excitement. They remember the great time they're having at WATS and how much they use it. And they want to buy, capture that energy and buy the passes this year. So we want to see if the board has any problem with that. And if not, we will announce that when we announce when we're closing for the season.
Lisa Shepherd, does this mean we have to announce our policy for next year on, like, anything else, or does this just mean...
Nope, we won't announce our policy. We will just say, you know, we'll be following the state guidelines for next season, and we don't know what those are right now, so...
What I mean is the only way in this year was the season pass.
Correct.
Next year... People don't know, and people who may want to use it three times are now thinking,
right,
how to buy a season pass. So 10 months from now, when you sell daily passes, are they going to be frustrated?
Well, we'll make sure they know that. That'll be a part of our language, because there's going to be no guarantee that there won't be dailies. But what we will have is the people that really want those season passes of value would buy them this year to save that 3%, maybe increase or whatever in our WATS fees. And if they don't think that's an incentive to save on this year's prices, they won't. And they'll still have the opportunity to buy next year.
I would make the argument, this is the last thing I'm going to say on it, because I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. I'll make the argument that if they really are that gung-ho on buying the passes, they'll spend $10 more next year.
They might, but otherwise, but what we're trying to do is capture this excitement this year.
Mm. Yeah, I get it, but I think it's a... That's it. Okay. I don't know what else, but anyone else with any thoughts?
I don't think we have anything to lose. We're not putting anything out. If they buy it, they buy it. If they don't, they don't. It's my
I don't have an objection to it, Lisa, but my advice is to at least consider the loss in flexibility that it gives you, right? Because once you sell it, you've kind of locked yourself in, at least to some degree, to a structure for how you're going to organize pricing next year.
Because they can change, they can do anything they want for the new season. This is just saying, you have the opportunity to get it at this price, but right?
Well, the question is what the question that I'm raising, Stephanie, is what is quote unquote it, right? I think Michael raised the question of, well, is it different if you're also offering season passes or also offering day passes, or if the hours of availability are different? I don't want to make a capital case out of it. I'm just saying,
yeah,
before you make a decision, consider that you're essentially promising somebody something in return, and it's multiple months before you would normally decide how you're going to spend it.
Right. We would have to definitely word it where we say there's okay, we're not guaranteeing the season will look the same as this year. We yeah. may sell dailies. You know, open skate times are subject to change from this year. We will put all that in.
But the season pass will not be less. It may be more, but it won't be less.
Well, look at what you just did with the beach, though, Lisa.
It may be more.
The season pass is half the price.
Yeah, but we already have that model, so I don't think we're going to do that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to raise up the idea.
I think it ties you down, Lisa, and I think there's a possibility, unless you have really clear communication, that you can frustrate some people. But I don't think there's a negative to it if we're saying, look, if you want to get season passes for next year, you can do so. I would be really clear that while, you know, we don't know what next year looks like, we may also be able to offer daily passes next year too. Because I don't want to force people to buy something because they think it's the only way in. Because there's a lot of people in town, at least my friends, I don't know about you, Stephanie, I mean, you've got kids my kids' age, who are really upset they couldn't get into WASP this year. And so I don't want them to feel like they're forced to buy the $100 pass because they think they're going to use it 3 or 4 times.
No, like I said, we'll make it very clear that we're not guaranteeing that there's not dailies next year.
Well, we've talked about in the past several times, you know, doing that combo pass between Ross and the beach. There's probably not enough time to like throw something together now, but is that ever a possibility? You guys have raised it before, you know, saying, okay, you just buy for the season.
I would look, wait till we have our new system.
Yeah, post-COVID too, I think.
But it's definitely, as we go into new, whatever software, yeah. registration software we use, make sure it has that capability to be able to do that. But right now, I don't think we could make that commitment right now. Any other thoughts on that? So, Lisa and Bobby, do you need direction? I heard from two, so do the rest of the Stephanie, Lisa, and Bobby.
I would say it does, I think the way it's communicated is really critical, but I don't have an objection to it. I don't have much thought on it. If you think that this would be something you'd like to try, then I wouldn't have an objection to it. Okay. Dudley?
I feel about the same as Lisa. It's an experiment, I guess, this year. We'll see how it goes. I'm quite concerned about how things develop with COVID over the next 6 months to a year, but I'm hoping that doesn't enter into the situation. But we'll just have to see.
Okay. Lisa, any other business?
Nope, that's all I have.
Okay, then the board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss personnel as mandated by Section 2.065 ILCS 120/2(c)(1). Those present during executive session will include all commissioners. Can someone move that motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Lisa Shepherd, please note the time and do a roll call, please.
It's 8:21. Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdog?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes. Motion.
And did I get Commissioner Colby?
I also agree.
Okay. Okay, right. Motion passes. So now switch recorder and switch the SD card.
All right, so that means only no one stays except the board. Thank you all.
All right, recording.
Okay, I entertain a motion to return to open session.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Jenny, note the time and do a roll call vote, please.
8:47 p.m. Commissioners Boron.
Yes.
Kobe?
Yes.
Lutton?
Yes.
Anderjonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
People jumped on that awfully fast. Roll call vote, please.
All right. It is still 8:47. Commissioners Boron?
Yes.
Kobe?
Yes.
Lutton?
Yes.
Anderjonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. My goal is...